This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At first glance, the crisis afflicting Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac seems like just one more twist in the long downward spiral of the housing market. And then you see some of the numbers involved. Together, these two institutions finance more than half the mortgages in this country. Together, they owe $5 trillion. Fannie and Freddie are private corporations, but somehow eligible for emergency federal loans. And when legislation backed by the major players in both political parties gets through Congress, perhaps as soon as this week, the federal government may even buy some shares. So what are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Why are they so important? And why should you care? Later in the program, Jesse Jackson's language may have been unfortunate, but he's not the only black leader asking questions about Barack Obama. Eric Easter from EbonyJet.com joins us on the opinion page. But first, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, if you're a homeowner, if you're looking for a mortgage, if you're a taxpayer, how does this affect you? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also share your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with some explanation. Dean Faust is Atlanta Bureau Chief for Businessweek magazine. He joins us from the studios of member station WABE in Atlanta. And nice to have you back on the program, Dean.
Oh, my pleasure.
And how much trouble are we in here?
I think what the Treasury and Fed officials were concerned about over the weekend was another financial Armageddon, a meltdown of the financial markets, because you think as bad, as much as they were worried about the problems of Bear Stearns 4 months ago, This was Bear Stearns on steroids. The problems here would have been far more massive and would have been felt globally. Let me give you one number. The federal government has about $9 trillion in debt that's outstanding, but about half that is money for in the Social Security Trust Fund. So it isn't tradable debt. So there's about $4.5 trillion in tradable federal debt in the world. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac together have more than that. They have about $5 trillion in outstanding debt between the debt they have on their books and the mortgages that they have guaranteed that are in circulation around the world. $5 trillion, if they had been unable this morning, Freddie Mac had an auction where they were raising $3 billion in bonds to keep their business going, meet payroll and all that stuff. And if they had failed to do that, you could have set off a chain of defaults that would have been felt around the world. Eventually, worst case scenario, $5 trillion of defaults that would have wiped out banks in the U.S. and it would have been felt from here to China.
Yet we're also told $5 billion in debts, but they're all $5 trillion rather. But they're also owed almost all that much. They have all those mortgages that people are going to pay off.
They do, but the value of those mortgages, one of the problems they have right now is that the value of those mortgages are declining by the day, week, and month. If you look at the national housing picture right now, where we're being told that month over month, the value of homes in the nation are going down another 5%, another 10%, you're now looking at so many homeowners who took out a mortgage to buy a house in the last 2 or 3 years are all underwater. Or many of them, depending on the markets they bought the house in across the country. And you run the risk there that some of those people, if they're underwater enough, they walk away.
And tell us briefly, how is it that private corporations when times are good, their profits go to their shareholders, when times are bad, like there are now, how come you and me, the taxpayers, pick up the bill?
There's an old saying in finance that if you, and I'll try to make an analogy here, but if you or I had a credit card from a bank and we owe $5,000 on the credit card, then the bank owns us. But if we are if we're General Motors or if we're Fannie Mae and we owe the banks $5 trillion, we own the banks. The banks cannot afford the consumer with the $5,000 in credit card debt, they could allow them to fail and then make their life miserable and try to get repayment. But, you know, it's a case of if you're in for a little, you're in for a lot. And that was the case that the government found themselves in.
Dean Faust of Business Week. If you'd like to join the conversation about Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And Steve's on the line. Steve calling us from St. Louis in Missouri.
Hi, Yeah, I've heard this characterization over and over again that these two organizations are too large to fail. Yet I don't know, maybe I'm having trouble computing here. You know, the government has taken large successful organizations like IBM and AT&T that were enormous organizations and split them apart, and those organizations, you know, went on to succeed and so forth. I can't really grasp how we're willing to let these two financial organizations, which go through, and unlike AT&T and IBM, you know, successful organizations, these two have essentially, you know, been managed into the ground and are unsuccessful organizations. They aren't people. They are legal fictions, and yet we are willing to grant them so much latitude. I certainly would not want to be in the position of, you know, losing all of my money and my financial investments, but I find it hard to believe that the market wouldn't in some way be able to correct for this, even if the consequences would be grave.
Mm-hmm. Dean Faust, why are they too big to fail?
I'm not sure the market could correct for $5 trillion in losses. I think in this case that the caller is correct. How did we get ourselves into this situation? And that's a commentary on the financial clout and lobbying prowess that Fannie and Freddie developed in Washington over the past 10 to 20 years. No one did lobbying better than Fannie Mae. They positioned themselves that they were on the side of the angels, that if you were a critic of Fannie Mae, you were anti-housing. And I do think that they were allowed to get too big. And in fact, one of the proposals that's now floating around today is that the government should seek, once they stabilize the situation with Fannie and Freddie, that they should start thinking about a breakup like Ma Bell 20, 25 years ago, and break up Fannie Mae into a series of small regional banks like the Federal Home Loan Bank Boards.
Steve, I'm not sure that's a complete answer to your question, but it's the one we've got.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the phone call. Joining us now is Gretchen Morgenson. She's at her office in New York. She's a business columnist for The New York Times. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Oh, anytime. Happy to be here.
And it scarcely escaped anybody's notice that this is a presidential election year. And there's a seemingly no issue that can not provoke a finger pointing and blame from one side to the other and back and forth. Except this one. Everybody's on board. Everybody says that we've got to come to the rescue of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. How come?
I think because everyone realizes that they may have been a part of the problem. That might be one explanation for it. This is a situation where there is so much blame to go around. I mean, it could go around twice to all the same cast of characters. I mean, we have a Congress that refused to beef up the regulator for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to make sure that this problem wouldn't result. We have the regulators themselves that allowed mortgage abuses to go on under their noses without reining them in, which now is translating into bad mortgages in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I mean, it is just a laundry list of problems, and sort of you could put them under the rubric of paying homage to the idea of deregulation as the answer to all problems.
And yesterday in your column in the Times, you wrote about, Dean Faust just referred to, the lobbyists for these two institutions. Anytime questions were raised in Congress, those questions were steamrolled.
Absolutely. I mean, these were two amazingly able and well-oiled machines. And anybody who, you know, got up on their legs to try to say that, well, we should be careful, these companies are getting too big. Their implicit guarantee by the federal government is putting us all at risk. Boy, they were just knocked down and, left for dead at the side of the road.
Implicit federal guarantee. What is that about? How come they have an implicit federal guarantee?
Well, Fannie Mae was set up in 1938 as a quasi-government entity. It was built to try to facilitate mortgage lending, and obviously it has done so, and done so to a fairly well if it's going to have these kinds of numbers attached to it that we know now it does. So it has a couple of aspects of it that, because people believe it to be sort of backed by the federal government, now appearing to be more and more backed, but for the years that things were going fine, one of those aspects was that it cost less to borrow in the capital markets for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac than, say, Bank of America or Citibank, because investors believed that it was safer because of the implicit government guarantee. What that meant translated into far greater profits for Fannie Mae shareholders and Freddie Mac shareholders and for the executives of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so, unfortunately, what we have, as you pointed out earlier, is we have what's called privatizing profits, meaning that the profits during the good times go to the shareholders and the executives, and in the bad time, we are socializing losses, which means the taxpayer pays.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Fred. Fred with us from Glendale in Missouri.
Hi. I wonder. I have a question here. I'm looking at my, you know, the monthly statement you get from your broker,
mm-hmm.
and I have one of these under government and agency securities. I have a Federal National Mortgage Association medium term note. Now it's supposed to be a Freddie Mac, I guess that is.
Fannie Mae.
Oh, that's a Fannie Mae.
Yeah.
Well, it has a rating of 3 big A's,
uh-huh.
A slash another A, big A, and then 2 little A's. Am I in trouble?
No, you're not. In fact, you're one of the people who probably does not have to worry because the government is pretty much stepping in today and saying that they're going to back these things. The shareholders are the ones who are really in trouble and have seen their value of their holdings decline by 80% so far
mm-hmm.
this year. But the bondholders are not in trouble. And so I really wouldn't worry about it if I were you.
I won't. If you say so. Okay, well, thank you. You ease my mind.
I'm
a lot of other folks listening in, I'm sure.
Especially well, there's plenty to worry about. Let's not worry about stuff we don't have to.
Yeah, well, us older folks have probably invested quite a bit in these two organizations. And, you know, retirees we are.
Well, a lot of money market funds have them, et cetera.
Oh.
Yeah. Fred, good luck.
All right. Thank you, Neil.
Appreciate the phone call. We're talking about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and U.S. government's plan to step in and bail them out. We'll take more of your calls, too. 800-989-8255. Zap us an email if you'd like. talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Together, those two institutions own or guarantee nearly half the mortgages issued in the United States. Now, they're both in need of a rescue. If you don't understand how it got this far, well, we're asking you're taking your questions. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Our guests are Dean Faust, Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week, and Gretchen Morgenson, business columnist for The New York Times. Here's an email question from Pat in Belleville, Illinois. Will your guest answer the question, why do we pick up the pieces but get none of the profit? I guess, Dean Faust, that's to you.
Actually, the government is talking about getting a little bit of the profit because one of the proposals that Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson advanced, or at least his staff has, is the idea that the government not only is going to raise the limit on how much debt from Fannie and Freddie they'll guarantee up to $300 billion, but also may take an investment, make an investment in the company. And here the idea is that if we're going to bail you guys out, you know, we're going to get a little bit of the upside, just as the government did with Chrysler back in the early 80s.
And Gretchen Morgenson, some are saying, hey, you know, why stop at a few shares? They're depressed now. Why don't we buy the whole thing? And as some have suggested, then spin it off.
Well, the problem to any of these questions is that we do not really know on the outside looking in, and I am even talking about a very astute, you know, analysts who follow these companies closely. We do not know what these mortgages look like that they have. We don't know how many pay option arms they have, and we don't know how much subprime that they have that really could go bad.
So we don't know the extent of their exposure to those adjustable rate mortgages and the subprime loans that we've all been hearing about.
Correct. And we do know that the numbers are vast, and we do know that other banks who are in this business are having huge problems on their own, and so we can extrapolate and and sort of see that it's a really big problem or a really big potential problem. But there is absolutely no way to really plumb these financials at the moment. And so for people who want to step in and say, oh, well, let's just buy the whole company, you know, I say it is far too early to do that because you just don't know what you're buying.
Let's get Dave on the line. Dave with us in Wichita in Kansas.
Thanks for taking the call. Listening to this over the last few days and the Baron Stern situation a few weeks back, I kept getting reminded of what happened at the end of the Reagan administration with the savings and loan industry. And we'd heard all about how if we just deregulated them, they'd be free to do business and everything would be better. And the taxpayers wound up bailing that industry out to the tune of, I believe it was about $500 million. Shouldn't this be another reminder that every time we hear the siren song of deregulating a business that's or a line of work that's been successfully deregulated, that maybe we should remember why it was regulated to begin with?
Gretchen Morgenson, I think that's one of your points.
I absolutely agree. And the thing that has been extremely distressing to me as a financial reporter watching this is that, you know, we don't seem to have learned any lessons from the SNL crisis of the late 80s. And in fact, don't seem to have any kind of playbook that the regulators are using. You know, if there was to be a crisis in a foreign country, I think that we feel pretty comfortable that our government would have a response ready. But, you know, in this crisis, which is sort of the financial version of 9/11, we have absolutely no, I don't have any confidence that the government has a plan in place. I mean, it really seems to be like careening back and forth like a ping pong ball. And it's just, it's very disturbing. But the deregulatory aspect of this is central to this disaster. You're absolutely right.
And expecting, you know, an administration with this philosophy to have a plan for fixing something that needs regulation is so antithetical to what got us here to begin with, their whole philosophy. They had authority to regulate some of this mortgage stuff for quite a long time, and the Fed never did it. It was antithetical to their point of view.
Exactly. And, you know, there were rules in place that were completely flouted by many of these organizations, and nobody held them accountable whatsoever.
Well, it seems something worth remembering in November.
Yes.
Dave, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Gretchen Morgenson, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Oh, anytime, Neil. Thank you.
Gretchen Morgenson, a business columnist for The New York Times, joined us today by phone from her office in New York. Dean Faust, let me ask you one aspect of, well, it was just last week, it seemed, the Treasury Secretary said, well, these two institutions are adequately capitalized, no need to worry. That was supposed to cover things. And then, well, this past weekend, scrambling to put together a package they're hoping to pass as soon as this week.
Indeed, I think last week he was trying to, look, this is a classic case of a regulator or a politician saying everything's fine, and they're going to say that until the moment when they have to say nothing, you know, everything is not fine. I think what scared them last week was the collapse in Fannie and Freddie's stock prices on the belief by the markets that as home values continue to plummet around the country, that all those people who bought a house 2 years ago and paid $700,000 in some red-hot market like Vegas or Southern California, now their house is only worth $450,000, say, wow, forget this. I'm just mailing the keys into Fannie Mae. That was the – and I think they realized that on Monday – Freddie Mac and Fannie, on an ongoing basis, they were going to have some important debt issues that they had to make, and I think they were scared that there was a loss of confidence in the markets.
Well, let's get another view of the situation now from Stephen Perlstein. He is a business columnist for The Washington Post and with us today from their offices here in Washington, D.C. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Neil.
And in your column this morning, you don't call this a government bailout, though some people say it sure looks that way.
Well, we don't know that it's a bailout, but I think it's important to use the right words here because bailout conjures up something that that it isn't. The government has said it would if Fannie and Freddie got into short-term cash problems, sometimes referred to as liquidity problems, that they would lend them some money with appropriate collateral. They've always had that line of credit at the Treasury. They've extended that and added to it with the Federal Reserve. They also held out the possibility, which may be necessary, that the government would invest like a shareholder in Fannie and Freddie to provide them equity capital, risk capital, as their regulatory capital melts away as they take more and more reserves against future losses.
So, in other words, if it all works out right, if this does psychologically shore them up, then we may not have to pay a dime.
We might not, and in fact, the government might make money. We don't know. Neil, the trick, this is very complicated, and it's largely an accounting question. And the money has not been lost yet. But under accounting rules, and there are various accounting rules that apply to Fannie and Freddie, they have to anticipate a level of loss and then take reserves against that anticipated loss. It's hard to do that now because nobody, including Fannie and Freddie, and none of us, know exactly where the housing market is going to go. The other problem is that under accounting rules, they have to value the assets on their books every quarter as if they were, or not, that's not all of them, but many of them, as if they were going to sell them right now. Well, the truth is they're not going to sell them right now, and the reason they're not is because the market into which you'd sell them is very depressed. There really aren't any buyers, and so the prices are very low. So if you assign that depressed value to their assets, well, sure, they look like they're in trouble. But if you say, well, if you hold on to those things until the market recovers in a year, two, three, four, five, will they be worth more? Probably, in which case they're not anywhere near insolvency. And that's why this is a difficult thing. It is, at this point, still a confidence game. If everyone had confidence that they would survive, they would survive. If everyone doesn't have confidence that they'll survive, they risk survival.
Let's see if we can get Brian on the line. Brian's calling us from Cincinnati. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, I think your guest just answered my question. My knowledge of mortgages is based on my being in the home building business. And my understanding is that all Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac mortgages require 20% down or private mortgage insurance. They require people to qualify. They require documentation. So my question was going to be, why is there this seemingly sudden lack of confidence in those type of loans? I mean, I clearly understand why there were problems with Countrywide and the Bear Stearns mortgage-backed securities, but I think your guest just answered my question. So they have to account for these loans as if they were going to have to sell them today, and that would sort of mean that they're valuing their assets as if everybody in America who has a Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae mortgage is going to sell their house today.
Yeah, Stephen Perlstein, as I understand it, a subprime loan, the ones that got all Countrywide and all those other companies into so much trouble, those are defined as loans that they wouldn't qualify for Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae.
It's not true that they have no subprime loans. They have made some as part of their commitment to do something for low-income housing. But as a general rule, Freddie and Fannie set pretty high standards for the mortgages that they buy and the ones that they package and insure. You know, they do both things. They don't hold all the mortgages they insure. They package, insure them, and then sell them off again in packages. But yes, they tended to deal in a high quality of mortgages, most what's called conforming mortgages. And so I think Gretchen maybe was wrong when she says that we can extrapolate from the experience of other banks to Freddie and Fannie. That's not true. Freddie and Fannie deal with the best stuff.
Yet, isn't it also true that even people who paid 20% down on their mortgages, a lot of those people are in trouble now because their houses are worth so much less?
You know, Neil, a lot has been made of the fact that a lot of mortgages are underwater. Most people like the house they live in. They don't want to move. And if it happens to be worth less than the value of their mortgage, it doesn't really mean anything as long as they keep the payments up. In 3 or 4 years, it'll be back above, and then it'll be as if nothing happened. Most people don't mail in the keys and walk away the moment that their house is worth less than the outstanding principal on the mortgage. That's just not the way the world works.
And Brian, one quick question to you. Are you in housing construction or development?
I'm actually in sales. I work for a builder here in town.
And how's it going right now?
Well, the market here is soft. It's not horrible. It's certainly not like Las Vegas or Phoenix or Florida.
It didn't go up quite so precipitously.
No, we didn't have those crazy double-digit, increases in value here. It's a little bit more sane marketplace. Housing prices are down a little. But builders and homeowners are doing things to, incentivize the sales of their homes. But we're part of the reason for my call is there seems to be sort of this feeding frenzy on fear. And like your guest just said, I don't know anybody to whom I sold a house in the last year that thinks that, first of all, that their house is worth a lot less than they paid for it. And I think that factual appraisals would establish that as true. And secondly, my experience after 27 years in the business, and I've worked in places where there were collapses in the marketplace. I worked in Denver in the late 80s when Silverado Savings went under and all the, you know, Black Monday and all that stuff. People don't tape their keys to an index card and mail them to their lender. They have to live somewhere. And I think there's a problem, I'm certainly not trying to minimize the problem that's out there. I think that a lot of this is psychological.
Brian, thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. We're talking about Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Lloyd on the line, and Lloyd's with us from San Antonio.
Hello, Neil.
Hi, Lloyd.
My family's in the banking business. We have a small independent bank in the San Antonio area, just 5 branches. But, you know, this certainly didn't come as a surprise to us. As a matter of fact, my colleagues in and around the area, we had a pool up as to when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac was going to fail.
Really?
No, and I didn't miss it by much. I missed it by 30 days.
Well, they haven't failed yet.
I guess, you know, I don't want to deal with semantics, but we meant when it really hit the fan and Uncle Sam was going to have to step in.
So who won the pool?
My assistant manager, one of the branches. He got within 1 week. But again, you know, we were discussing this morning over staff meeting, and we're in very good position because we didn't have any subprime loans. But I don't think that we don't necessarily have a problem with Uncle Sam bailing out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, with the caveat that as they did with Chrysler, there were a whole set of requirements that were necessary for them to bail out Chrysler. And as of this morning, I haven't heard of any specifics with regard to what Uncle Sam is going to expect back if, in fact, they do whatever is necessary to ensure that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac don't fail. And I think that's absolutely critical because certainly if they were to fail, quote fail, the problems, as I've already been indicated, would be worldwide. So anything that could be done to resolve the problem is going to be for our benefit.
Well, let me ask Dean Faust. Is there anything in this legislation that's already working its way through Congress which is going to pose, new strictures on Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae?
I think one thing that's going to happen is they're going to the Congress is going to require Freddie Mac and Fannie to hold far more capital, which is a reserve, so that if you as a lender do suffer a loss on a loan, you have a cushion to absorb that loss and you can make your payroll the next week. I actually have a question for the caller. You're a banker. Do you make mortgage loans?
Yes, we do.
Do you think that we are better off with Fannie and Freddie or not? And I ask that because, you know why I'm asking, because bankers came to hate Fannie and Freddie over the past 10 years. Fannie and Freddie would love to go and commission these studies. They would hire their economist who would say that thanks to Fannie and Freddie, homeowners and people who take out mortgages are saving 1 percentage point off what a mortgage would cost if we didn't exist. And there were critics who was, including the bankers, who would say, that's poppycock. If there are any benefits from being able to borrow at the cost of government, it's all being privatized and paid out in executive salaries.
And Lloyd, is that to summarize your attitude?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the other things, too, is there were...
And very quickly, if you could.
The giant banking concerns jumped into the subprime market with both feet. And we prided ourselves in handling our banking activities, you know, above and beyond. We've been in business for 150 years, and we're one of the best-rated banks in our area. And I think that we're not greedy, and a lot of the other banks were, and now they're suffering because of it.
Lloyd, thanks very much, and continue. Good luck to you. If you could make it very quick, Steve.
Well, I think it, look, let's not oversimplify and say all the benefits went to Fannie Mae executives. First of all, there's a pretty good literature that shows that about an eighth to a quarter of a point was shaved off the cost of a conventional mortgage in this country because of Fannie and Freddie. They made a lot of money, but most of the benefit went actually to homeowners, and as a fraction, although the executives were overpaid, they were overpaid. It's not the most of the money. That's really overstating the case.
Stephen Perlstein, a business columnist for The Washington Post, thank you very much. We'd also like to thank Dean Faust of the Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week and The Opinion Page. When we come back, this is NPR News.